IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast supported by Pragati, a flagship media initiative of the Takshashila Institution. We're a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like to bring a fresh perspective to Indian affairs and an Indian perspective to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to All Things Policy. This is a pretty special episode for us because of a couple of reasons. Firstly, Pratik and I are recording this in the middle of GCPP Tech and Policy Workshop while our students are working on a project around semiconductors. So in case you're interested to know more about the program, we'll put a link in the show notes. Applications are now open. I highly recommend that you check it out. And secondly, because this is actually one of those episodes where we get to talk about legislation in tech that is not exactly groundbreaking, but just extremely interesting to look at. I am, of course, talking about the Filter Bubble Transparency Act that was introduced in the US. It's the act is still a bill, and it's got a very simple purpose. The idea is that it requires internet platform give the users the option to engage with the platform without being manipulated by algorithms driven by user-specific data. Now, this sort of changes the nature of feeds, news feed, and other content feeds. And it's fairly interesting because it applies to just a bunch of companies, right? So I think before we get into looking at the bill itself, let's sort of put this into context with some academic studies. Of course, I have just the person here to do that. Pratik, welcome to the podcast. Could you please take us through this?
Hey, thanks, Lohan. Yeah, so there have been a couple of interesting studies on this front, right? So let me start Twitter and then we'll move on to Facebook. So in October, Twitter had put out a study looking at the amplification of political content on its home timeline versus the reverse chronological timeline, you know, or what we know as latest tweet. This is something that they had announced, I think, back in May when they said that they will be looking at various aspects of their machine learning decision making and how it affects, how it has broader effect in sight. So I think this was one of the projects that they had called out, and they finally put out the report sometime in October. And I don't think we heard a lot about it. There was some coverage, but I think, you know, with everything that was going on regarding the Facebook papers or Facebook files, or not, let's just call them Facebook document, this a study coming out from Twitter saying that, you know, that they found that the home timeline was, or, you know, or the home ranking system was amplifying right-leaning content more. It's pretty significant, right? And it doesn't seem like it got the type of, it got a lot of attention on that front. Right. So having said that, let's just run through some numbers and what the study actually was first. So they covered about 9.3 million daily users, or monetizable daily active users, as they called it. And about, I think, 80% of these, they ran through the algorithmic timeline, what we call that algorithmic timeline, or the home timeline, basically, which was the treatment group as such. And about 20%, which looked at your standard latest tweet, or the reverse chronological feed, which is the control group. They ran this from April to August 2021, and in 7 countries, right? So they did this for the US, UK, Japan, France, Germany, Spain, and Canada. I think it's worth noting that I think they initially started off just with US and UK, and somewhere along the way, they got feedback that they should expand the pool of countries, so that, because Twitter is a global platform. So they did 7 countries. You know, yes, it would have been interesting to have India in there to see what the results look like. But at least for now, we don't. And what they tried to do was, looking at these users, they tried to measure the amplification of, you know, political content on home timeline versus the reverse chronological one. And they did this in 2 parts. And I'll come to what the results were for each. But one was for politicians across all 7 countries. And the second bit of it was for media publication. And this aspect was related to the, restricted to the US. Couple of limitations, I think, worth noting is that, look, even in this scenario where they had this 20% control group of people who just were in, or accounts, not actually people, who just had the reverse chronological timelines, it didn't exist in a vacuum, right? There were going to be effects from other users who were using the algorithmic or the home timeline, right? So there's always going to be that aspect. And I think they've called that out, saying that this is a potential limitation. And the other being that over time, so same thing, introduced the the algorithmic timeline, I think 4 or 5 years ago, they have been using the differences between what, you know, what happens with this control group that they maintain and the regular home timeline. And they've been using that to make improvements in their feature, right? So it, over time that it got tweaked as well. So I think those are two things to keep in mind. Let's go to the bit about politicians first. And it especially interesting because, you know, as I sort of indicated earlier, that there did seem to be a bias towards amplifying right-leaning content. So, you know, so in those 7 countries, I think they did this for approximately 3,600 legislators. And in 6 out of 7, so all except Germany, in aggregate, right, at this point is important, in aggregate, parties on the right were amplified a little more than parties on the left. And I think specifically in UK and Canada, this was the highest. Well, this is notable because in both those countries right now, the Conservative Party is in power, right? Which is right leaning. So the Prime Minister, Cabinet Ministers, etc., significant public officials also make that list. So they also excluded those, right? And basically found that the net results didn't really change significantly, right? So irrespective of whether it didn't change that much. Now, at an individual level, it's interesting because while for some politicians, I think they saw amplification up to 400%, also there were also cases where it was less than zero, right? Which means that you were less likely to see content from those politicians across on the home feed or the algorithmic feed versus if you were just looking at the reverse chronological feed, right? And at an individual level, there did not seem to be a significant difference between, you know, whether the party was in power or not. The other interesting thing to note was that what they observed was that amplification of, I think, party that you'd probably identify as far left or far right was lower than the more mainstream one. And now, this is a little counterintuitive given a lot of the discourse that, you know, those parties tend to get amplified more. The only counterpoint I can maybe add here, and something actually worth considering or food for thought, is I think we also have to consider the fact that, look, even the more mainstream parties are adopting points from the parties that are, you know, more far left or far right, right? Leaning towards the other extremes of political spectrum. So I think we need to take that into account. But nevertheless, I think this is an interesting observation that, you know, the far left and the far right ones seem to see lower levels of amplification than the more mainstream ones. The other interesting thing was that The Economist also did, I think, an article on this, and they used Twitter data to see that, you know, to go back to the overall aggregate amplification of the right versus the left, right? And they looked at the data and put it into a slightly different model, which also accounted for vote shares in recent elections. And in that case, again, they found that it still favored right-leaning parties. Very quickly, I'll just talk about the media part of it as well. Now, in that, like I said, it was restricted to the US, and they relied on two types of classification, right? One by, I think it's pronounced AdFont, and the other by All Sides, which essentially classify various publications, you know, based on leaning right from, you know, from right, left, right, neutral. And here they found that, you know, partisan sources were amplified more, and those on the partisan right were amplified a little bit more than those on the left. Again, I referenced The Economist article earlier that incidentally also looked at, you know, accuracy ratings, and they claim based on their analysis that the one that were rated less accurate received a little bit more amplification than the ones rated more accurate. Right. Just another important point to note is that there is a difference between the way AdFonts and AllSide classify a lot of publications. They especially, I think there's general agreement on what on the right side of the spectrum, but on the left, I think there is a little bit of a difference in the way they do it, in the sense that so just take an example, right? So I think AdFont classifies New York Times Opinion and New York Post, while AllSide classified them as left and right, right? So there is a tendency for AdFonts to classify more, especially the more left-leaning publications as neutral.
Right. I think that's incredibly interesting. And I do have questions that I'd like to sort of ask and also then move on to talk about the bill. But before we do that, let's take a quick commercial break. Hi, welcome back to All Things Policy. I'm here with Prateek, and we are going into some fascinating academic research about filter bubbles and about how content is shared and people engage with. So are there any other studies that we should be aware of before we talk about the bill itself?
Yeah, so there's at least one more that I that came out recently. And this was a paper by Jack Bandy and Nicholas Diakopoulos. And they did something similar in the sense that they compared the reverse chronological and algorithmic feeds to just get a sense of what type of content is amplified. Now, this was not restricted to just political content as Twitter's was. And of course, you know, being external researchers, not having access to the same amount of data, they had to go about it in a slightly different way. So what they effectively did was that I think they followed a whole bunch of, you know, political accounts on the left, in the US, grouped users, created profile, and then essentially created, I think, if I remember correctly, it was about 8 accounts, 4 left-leaning, 4 right-leaning, right? These were dummy accounts that just had different, you know, that followed different types of accounts, right? They just mapped it according to some existing users. And they sampled it about 50 tweets from their timeline about twice a day, right? Again, this is due to limitations of the amount of data they could collect, etc. And I think they also found out that between looking at 50 tweets and a larger number of tweets, there wasn't a significant difference. Point to note is that none of these accounts actually clicked on the links. So that's a potential limitation in the sense that, you know, assuming that's a signal that goes into the recommendation, right, of the home algorithm, that is something that was probably not captured, right? And they found a couple of interesting things as well, in the sense that the home feed actually showed fewer external links, right? So there was, you know, if you're listening for better ways to get engagement on Twitter, maybe there's some hints in here. But essentially, that I think more than half of the tweets, I think, in the chronological timeline contained an external link, but about 20% on algorithmic timeline contained an external link. The number of suggested tweets made up more than half of the algorithmic timeline. Interestingly, there was more source diversity in the algorithmic timeline. Diversity in the sense just meant more accounts, not necessarily political leaning or anything of the sort. And they also noticed a shift in topics. So they classified them as, you know, political, economic information. And I think specifically for COVID, there was information around fatalities. And I think they noticed that except for the bucket that they classified as political, across all the others, there was actually reduced exposure on the algorithmic timeline, right? So just a final point, I think, on this was interesting in the sense that they noticed, and they put this in quotes, right, a slight partisan echo chamber effect. Notably, it was not to say, it was not from the perspective of whether the algorithm itself was making the decision, unlike the Twitter study, which was looking at, you know, they're looking at from that perspective. This was rather looking at, you know, what happened for, you know, in terms of exposure to partisan accounts, right, that these 8 test accounts that they had set up, that they were following based on the home versus the, or the, yeah, algorithmic versus the chronological feed. And I think there they found that in both cases, the number of bipartisan account, you know, that if you could classify them as, you know, I think the classification they used was whether they were left, niche left, bipartisan, niche right, and, you know, right. What they noticed was that in both cases, the exposure to bipartisan accounts reduced. Right? So that's certainly interesting. And of course, you know, we can't not address the Facebook documents, Facebook files, Facebook papers, because one of the documents there referred to a 2018 study where I think Facebook, a researcher on Facebook essentially disabled the newsfeed algorithm for somewhere at about 0.05% of Facebook users, right? And what they found was that people spent more time scrolling, which short term meant more ad impressions, more revenue. But overall, it led to, you know, lower engagement because it was just that people were scrolling, they were disliking content, removing it from their feeds, you know, hiding posts, etc. Right. So it essentially just resulted in, initially, I think more ad revenue, but overall reduced engagement. Right. So it's not as straightforward as, you know, one is necessarily better than the other. I think there are important aspects to consider with both.
Right. That's quite fascinating. The one thing I did not think I would hear on this podcast today was tips to improve my Twitter game, but I'm quite glad that we went there. But let's sort of take a moment and now talk about the bill itself, which I think is an interesting piece of legislation, because my takeaway from this, and I read this yesterday, was that generally, if you're a company of a certain size with a certain amount of revenue, you're not allowed to Now, the one thing you need to do is to have more transparent algorithms, as in, now let me rephrase that, is to provide the users the option to go with a feed that's not algorithmically altered based on personal data that's been collected on you. And I'm not entirely sure that this is, I mean, the objective of this is not very clear to me, and Prateek, maybe you can help me here. And I don't even know if it's going to be effective. The reason I say this is because I am a frequent user of Reddit, and Reddit gives you the option to sort of switch between feeds. It gives you the option to go with the most popular stuff, or it gives you the option to go with stuff that you, with the subreddits that you follow. And I often switch between the two, and maybe on Twitter, I recall that there is an option to change your feed to latest or to keep it to the hottest content that's out there. And of course, like, I don't know how many people change between them, but broadly, I haven't seen this to be a very effective way. I mean, the choice architecture research that people don't generally go with the chronological feed because there is not a lot of value, I would say, in going there. So, but do you think differently, or what do you think the objective of this bill is, Prateek? And do you think this is a good way to get there?
Yeah. So there's with any of these bills right now, there is always going to be an element of political theater, right? I think, and we've discussed that, especially in the US right now. So but let's set that aside. I don't think the bill mentioned reverse chronological itself, but I think they refer to two types of algorithms, right? One being an input transparent algorithm, where I think the ranking system is allowed to use information that users explicitly provide for ranking, right? Which, as per the bill, includes things like search terms, filters, save preferences that users may have put in, you know, their current geographical location, and information about, you know, that a user's follows or subscription that they currently have, right? And it cannot be based on inferences of, you know, where or based on their historical activity, historical locations, you know, general device interaction, then financial transactions. I think they make an exception for age-appropriate content. So this is the input algorithm, and the opaque algorithm is, of course, where you are relying on information from users, right? Now, interestingly, I think we also look at applicability, right, of this, because I think it says that it would apply to companies with more than 500 employees, and I think a greater average annual revenue of $50 million or more in the past 3 years, and 1 million users, right? So it's not necessarily affecting everyone or the entire internet, but it's still affecting a significant chunk of the internet that is not Facebook, right? And I think that's important to keep in mind here, because a lot of these laws, it seems like they're written with Facebook in mind, but they apply to broader sections of the internet. So, you know, so Shoshana Wodinsky had an interesting article in Gizmodo where she talks about, look, this means that Spotify will now have to have a version where, you know, it can't recommend artists based on who's having concerts in your area, etc. Right? Or Netflix cannot use all types of information. It's going to be a lot more restricted in the way that it makes recommendations in one version of it. Right? Again, I think to be fair, it doesn't say that you can't do any sort of ranking. It says you have to have a version, right, of the service that uses the input transparent algorithm, and users can switch between them. I think that is certainly better than a scenario where they just try to mandate that you can't use any sort of algorithm, right? I think that's something to keep in mind. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see in the sense of what the broader applicability of this means, because this is not just going to apply to the likes of Facebook, Twitter, right? TikTok, for example. I don't think, again, it doesn't even have a reverse chronological feed option, right? A bunch of others, I think Instagram no longer does, right? So, and there was an interesting post a couple of years ago, this was back in 2018, by Benedict Evan, right? And in that, he estimates that, look, in an average Facebook user is likely to receive about 1500 updates in their feed in a day, right? And So if you look at that, right, that's way too much content for anyone to comb through, right? So you're likely just going to just look at random content based on people you made connections with over the last X years. Probably the only variable factor is based on what time of day you look at, right? Whether you look at it at 5 in the evening or 10 in the morning, right? That's the only factor that's changing. And, you know, is that necessarily... what kind of experience is it creating, et cetera? I think that remains unknown. And like you said, right, there are some of these options already. It's interesting that they want to mandate it, but some of these options exist, and I don't know how many people use it. So to be honest, I tend to use latest tweets on Twitter more than I use the home timeline. But, you know, I don't think most people most people use it that way, right? I think like you, they tend to favor on Reddit the hottest tab or the home timeline or whatever. So it remains to be seen, you know, whether this whether it'll even pass, right? I think that's always something to keep in mind, because there are a lot of these bills floating around and what final form they pass in, whether they pass in, you know, remains to be seen. But, you know, even if they don't, I think it creates a momentum, it creates a conversation, which is not just limited to the US. And I think that's why it's important to monitor these things around the world, because the way there is this regulation contagion that's happening, right? With these platforms, if one country does something, another one wants to follow very quickly, right? So that's one of the reasons why I think we try to track these conversations in different countries. But yeah, whether it achieves its objective of solving the societal harms that we're trying to solve, I'm not so sure that it would.
Fair enough. I think the best possible conclusion for this, for us to come up with this, is that time will tell, because we'll have different countries responding in different ways based on the success or failure of this legislation and how it's perceived. So hang on tight. I'm sure that we're in for interesting times. Pratik, have you got any final thoughts?
No, nothing to add.
All right. So thank you for joining us. Thank you, Pratik, for taking us through a lot of literature and through the details of this bill. We will see you in the next episode of All Things Policy.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle, @TakshashilaInst, or our website, takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week: Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank, and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.